Okay, well, we're not going to wait for everybody. I am opening a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee on Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. And the good news, there are no LC drafts for introduction today, so we will skip the work session for possible introduction of committee measures. This is also just a reminder, the last day permitted for committee measure introduction, so we won't be seeing this item on the agenda from here on out. So, yay. Today's hearing will be about the transfer of credit between community colleges and universities in Oregon, what's currently going on, where the problems lie. This is a little bit of our effort to address affordability. It's kind of that the affordability theme that we're working on. So we'll get started, if we may. Ben Cannon, Rex Fuller, and Greg Homan, if you would join us, it'd be... opening an informational hearing. Got excited. And whoever would like to kick it off, that'd be great.
Good afternoon, Chair Reardon, members of the committee. For the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Good to see you again. So I will kick things off here with a presentation. We have slides, which you should have as well, and will be projected on screen. I don't intend to take more than 10, 15 minutes with the presentation before turning it over to my colleagues to my left. There are about 20 slides here, so we'll move fairly quickly, but as you've grown to accustom, a few of them are sort of data rich, and so if we pause and spend any more time on those, I'll certainly understand. Let me just at the outset begin by quoting the Higher Education Coordinating Commission strategic plan. We adopted this, or our commission adopted this last year, and it includes this statement. A central reason for the existence of our coordinating commission is to engineer simpler, more effective, and efficient learning pathways for students in every post-secondary sector. And I think if I were to edit this today, I would probably say we exist in part to foster the engineering of those pathways. It's not principally our job to establish them, but we certainly exist to support their creation. And if you think about a higher education coordinating commission, such as the one that I lead, which did not exist in this state.
Mr. Chair, who is responsible, Mr. Director Cannon?
Representative Wisnett, Chair Reardon, we share responsibility with institutions, their leadership, their faculty, for the development of learning standards and pathways for students.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, I'm military. Who's in charge?
Representative Wisnett, Chair Reardon, higher education has dispersed authorities, and it would be inaccurate for me to sit here today and tell you that I have the authority or even the primary responsibility for establishing learning standards, outcomes, requirements for students in higher education. Should that be the legislature's desire to establish a central and single point of authority, that's another matter. But it is not the case today that the HEC is the sort of singular point of responsibility for that work. But I do, and our plan expresses our commitment and sense of responsibility as a key participant in this. And if you, what I was going to say is, if you think about our role helping coordinate higher education, not community colleges or just community colleges, not just public universities, not just public institutions generally, but higher education, public and private, connections to K-12 and connections to the workforce, we are well situated, and indeed I think we're created in part to answer that very, you know, to respond to that very need that students and the state has for clearly articulated learning pathways between the sectors.
Thank you for those comments.
Today's focus really is on a very particular portion of that pathway, which is the pathway for students from two-year community colleges, typically two-year institutions, to baccalaureate institutions, our transfer students and their experience. Why does it matter? And Chair, I appreciate your comments about affordability. Let me amplify on that. In one recent national study that indicated that 81% of beginning community college students intend to transfer and earn a bachelor's degree or higher. The fact is we don't have a lot of great data on student intent at the outset of their community college journeys, and certainly it is the case that not all students at community colleges intend to earn degrees, much less bachelor's degrees, but at least under this survey, many do. And yet, the separate analysis showed that only 11% of degree-seeking community college students in Oregon do complete a bachelor's degree within 6 years. So there is clearly a appears clearly to be a disconnect between intent and the reality for our community college originating students. It is also the case nationally that transfer students, or students who begin at community colleges but end up transferring to a university, are more likely to be underrepresented in higher education historically and today. First-generation students, students of color, lower-income students. And if you think about the lower cost path that the community college represents for students, it is should not be surprising that we would find lower-income students in particular in that pathway. It is also the case, I'd add to this slide by saying, as and if the state continues its investment in support for the Oregon Promise as a low-cost community college beginning pathway for students, this question of transfer, clear and seamless transfer to the four-year institution becomes even more, ever more important. So what's the problem? And how can we sort of get a sense of the magnitude and the type of challenge that we have on our hand with respect to transfer from two-year to four-year institutions? And this presentation proposes that we can look at the answer, answering this question in really three ways. And I'm going to begin with the widest view, a view of sort of community college students as they begin and how they do. And then we'll start to sort of hone in and take a narrower view that tells a somewhat different story, and then we'll look finally at how students view the transfer process. But this is the beginning of a short set of data slides, and this begins with that wide view, and it looks at all degree-seeking community college students who entered Oregon in 2007. And it shows that in Oregon, 29% of those students transferred to a baccalaureate institution. So out of all of those degree-seeking students in the cohort, 29% of them eventually transferred to a baccalaureate institution. That's the first column of the table. You can see how that compares with other states in the national average. We're sort of in the midst of those other states. 30 of that 29%, so now to move to the next column, of those 29% who transferred, 38% of them completed a bachelor's degree within 6 years. And that is lower than, significantly lower than our neighboring West Coast states and somewhat lower than the U.S. average of 42%. So that is looking globally. It's not looking just at Oregon public institutions. It's looking at transfer to any four-year institution, public or private, in the United States and our community college students.
Mr. Cannon, you've inspired a question. Refresh you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cannon. Real quickly, is 2007 the latest date we have for this data, or is it, if we looked at 2009, would it be the same, or 2005, or do we have a swath of years? I'm just curious why 2007.
Rep. Reschke, Chair Reardon, members of the committee, it's the data upon which this 2016 study that we're citing here is based. Because of the 6 years that's permitted for completion, that pushes out the cohort, you know, sort of completion date towards that more 2013-2014 time period. My guess is that this study could be updated soon to reflect maybe the 2008 or 2009 cohorts, but hasn't been yet.
I want to make sure I understand. So 29% of all degree-seeking community college. So I thought we had a discussion the other day, and we didn't really know when somebody comes into the community college system whether they were seeking a degree or not. There's a lot of reasons that people go to community colleges. Could you help me understand that?
Representative Reardon, members of the committee, my understanding is that for the purposes of this study, degree-seeking was defined. They sort of made up a definition of degree-seeking that had to do with the credit load that the students were bearing. So they isolated. They looked in 2007, and they did this study for states all over the country, and they looked at community college enrollment, and they basically categorized a student as degree-seeking if they had enrolled in full-time courses for a term in credit-bearing courses, okay. So not sort of non-credit-bearing. Okay. They had a definition, essentially, and they used that as a proxy, if you will, okay. for degree-seeking. Okay. And we could give you the precise way in which they did that
that's
in
fine.
Follow-up.
Thank you.
So now I've added a third column to the data here, which is looking at their degree completion. The same 29% who transferred out of an Oregon community college into a four-year institution. But now if we focus just on those students from that cohort who transferred to an Oregon public institution, 35% of them completed that bachelor's degree within 6 years. Again, suggesting that there is a challenge here with degree completion for community college transfer students. So now this view, which starts to, we're now taking a somewhat different lens, we're going to look in the next two slides at students who have enrolled in Oregon public universities. So now we're looking at Oregon public universities, and we're comparing the ones who began as freshmen, typical traditional freshmen in Oregon public universities, those are the green bars in the next couple of slides, to students who transferred to Oregon public institutions with significant amount of community college credit. So these are not students who for a summer did a class and then enrolled as freshmen in OSU or EOU or PSU. These are students who went with at least typically 24 or 36 credits. They are called transfer students by the receiving public four-year institution. They have a college GPA that gives them entitles them to admission. Qualifies them for admission. And here's their degree completion rate. So this is now a graduation rate. So comparing non-transfer students on the left-hand side at about 82% and transfer students on the right-hand side at 62%. And we believe these are really, in fact, comparable because the non-transfer students in that green bar, these we've isolated to those who have persisted all the way to the third year. So they made it through the freshman year. They didn't drop out. They came back for the sophomore year. They made it all the way back to the third year. And we're comparing them with transfer students from the community college who came in with significant credit. I've called that here robust transfer students. And you can see the success rate of the non-transfer students is higher. Another way of looking at this is now we're, again, similar population, focus on the left-hand side of this. These are students who have earned bachelor's degree at Oregon public universities. The minimum number of credits required for a bachelor's degree is 180. Some require more. And this slide depicts the number of credits that those students have actually earned. And so non-transfer students have earned, they've been awarded over 200, an average of 201 credits. Transfer students, on the other hand, have earned an additional 10 credits on average, so 211 at some additional cost, likely at the community college or at the university. But those are credits that, in a sense, have been likely they're over and above what is required as the minimum for a degree, and we'll talk in a moment about some of the reasons for that. The right-hand side is really the same data, and you simply see here the number of credits that the university has awarded to those different populations as opposed to ones that are being transferred in from elsewhere on their way towards a degree. This is perhaps the most interesting finding from our data, which is that when we compare our community college students and their transcripts and credit history, when we look at them at the community college level and then we look at them at the same student at the public university level, we find that 63% of our transfer students actually are entering universities with fewer credits than they earned at Oregon Community Colleges, meaning in addition to this 211 that they have earned and have been transcribed by the university, there are additional credits that are not even appearing on their university transcripts. They were earned at a community college, but have not been successfully transferred to a public university. At the same time, 35% of transfer students have lost more than one term of work. So that 63% includes 35% who, it's a pretty significant amount, more than a term. I do want to note here, we have also found students whose public university transcripts reflect more credits than they earned at the community college. Perhaps they were also taking courses online or from other institutions that aren't in our system. So final question.
Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Ben. I think the other thing to point out there, in addition to loss of credit, is loss of financial aid access, too, because some of these students have burnt up their PELs or burnt up their, what they would be available for. Mm-hmm. So in the process, so they're losing in multiple ways.
Representative Johnson, Chair Reardon, that's exactly correct. Final, now a different non-data driven perspective, but we had a group of students actually at University of Oregon who through a class worked with our committee, our commission and staff on providing some qualitative information about how students view the transfer process. So they did focus groups and surveys of transfer students at Oregon public universities, and some of the barriers that Oregon transfer students described included inadequate advising, perceived lack of support services after transfer, misunderstanding of financial aid, lack of coordinated, meaningful, and accurate information about transfer requirements. And you see the citation here if you're interested in reading that full report, which is very rich in student perception of the transfer process. So what's going on here, and really the presidents to my left, I think, can articulate a lot of this better than I, but let me just give it a start. And that is to say, we've constructed a pretty complex system. And I say that we sort of collectively have made it a fairly complex system. And again, to quote our strategic plan, the new student majority, and here this refers to the increasing diversity of students, including more part-time students, evening students, working students, parent students. The new student majority requires more options for education, but greater choice without adequate support makes education seem more like a maze than a pathway. This slide describes one of the types of barriers that students face, the reason for sort of credit loss. And simply put, and I won't walk you through all of this, but the particular issue this describes is that students, when they go to transfer from the community college to the university, they may find that university transcribes all of their credits. Great. They've accepted that the work that was done at Chebeckita is fully transcribable by OSU or by Western. But because the student wants to major in a particular subject that has lower division prerequisite requirements that student hasn't met through their general education at the community college, they're not, in fact, in junior standing. They're not ready to start the particular major. And so this map sort of describes that particular issue where the student's work, the general education that they did at a community college with all intent of being a junior when they finished, actually doesn't prepare them for the particular requirements that their major in biology or sociology or economics or business has. And so that's sort of a credit loss issue that it isn't about the credits aren't transcribed, but it is about having to sort of take lower division courses that meet the major requirements. And it begins to suggest sort of the complexity of this issue. This slide really summarizes what we see as kind of the sort of set of issues, including the one that I just described. We do have block transfer certificates and degrees, the Associate of Arts in Oregon Transfer, the Oregon Transfer module, but they don't align necessarily with the major requirements and the baccalaureate degree requirements of the four-year universities, leading to extra credits and time degree. That variability by major for universities can start, again, in the 100 and 200 level. So your student, you've taken your block of 100 and 200 level courses, but it turns out that it's not perfectly matched to the major that you choose at the university level. Universities vary in their general education requirements. So some universities, including Western, I believe, have a health and fitness requirement that is not common to all universities, but it is in our block transfer degree. So we require students who get the Associate of Arts in Oregon Transfer to obtain the health and fitness, meet the health and fitness requirement. So if they transfer to Western, they're good. If they transfer elsewhere, it may not have been required. And so in a sense, it's over. Yeah. It's been over obtained.
We have a question when you're ready.
And I think the final points on here have been covered. So let's.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I have a quick comment. One of the barriers by students that you mentioned, Mr. Cannon, was around inadequate advising. So kind of what this slide shows is, or I should say, my comment is around, or question is the advising on both ends, on the community college transitioning or helping students plan for the transfer to a university, or is it the advising from the university to the community college advisor? Does that make sense? I mean, I'm assuming it's a challenge on both ends.
Representative Alonzo León, Chair Reardon, yes, I think it is. And I think the presidents here could speak to that as well. But I agree that I think it's both. I will note, since advising came up and it's in our kind of recommendations and thinking about this, but I want to emphasize a note of caution. A complex system requires a lot of advising. We do need more advising in Oregon, and we need more advising partly to help navigate an overly complex system. We need more advising also to help students identify their passion, understand the way that educational goals can link to career goals, understand who they are, and not just how to navigate an overly complex structure. So, yes, I mean, one way of, in a sense, solving this problem would be to change nothing about the structure, but to do a lot more advising. I'm not convinced that's the optimal solution. Yes, more advising, but also hopefully less difficulty navigating an overly complex structure.
It certainly doesn't seem like a very cost-effective approach to use more advisors to counsel on a complex system.
Just, yes.
So
sure,
I agree with your observations.
Exactly. And I'm cognizant of the time here. I will simply conclude by saying we've got this slide here, which it describes how, again, going back to the student voice, some of their point of view on how the process could be improved by including through better information and better advising. You see here this sort of student need to get just to better understand how to make this system work for them. And then the final slides, which I don't want to spend really any time on, but I just want to click through, are a brief history of transfer policy in Oregon. And you will see a lot of effort over many years, both at the legislative level and at the board level and at the institutional level, to make this system more navigable for students. This work has been underway for decades, and Oregon has made progress as a result. The story here should not be that we have failed. In fact, Oregon in some ways is doing this work as well or better than many parts of the country. But it is work that requires continual renewal, because the challenge continues to persist. And so even right up through the last legislative session in House Bill 2015, we've had continuing efforts to try to address this. And the final slide here just notes some of the work that our staff is engaged with faculty and other leaders from the campuses to improve our transfer degrees and transfer modules. I do want to note, I have two of our staff who are leading on this work, Sean Pollack and Lisa Reynolds, who, if any really tough questions arise, can help in answering questions. But I want to turn it over to my colleagues.
We can tell how challenging the subject must be by the number of staff that you bring with you.
This is a tough one.
Okay. Thank you. Very helpful.
Thanks.
Good presentation.
Sorry. Trying to get our presentation up, so.
Okay. Whenever you're ready.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Are they waiting? Director Cannon, I mean, I bragged about the Oregon transfer. I've been here for all those bills that were passed about transferability, and we're still having problems with the Oregon transfer and Oregon transfer module. I mean, the presence of the universities, you've got to accept these. You know, this is money. This is lifetime that these, you know, and I understand the problem you're describing as far as changing majors or something like that. But since you're briefing this, I'm assuming it's not just one or two zooms. It's a problem for a lot of people that we said, here's a transfer thing that you'll get your first 2 years out of the way, and then you can graduate in 2 years and not have to pay for rent and food and everything for 4 years instead of two more years. So. That's my frustration, I guess, that you know that this has been one of my primary things to work on is transferability. I think it's a major cost driver in education, and it can be solved. The four-year schools have got to be more flexible. They've got to eliminate to the bare minimum to be a great degree, the number of required courses, and provide more electives to get a student through in 4 years and not 6 years.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else? Okay.
Chair Reardon and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rex Fuller. I'm the president of Western Oregon University, and I also serve as the chair of the Oregon Council of Presidents.
And for the record, my name is Greg Heyman. I'm the president of Lynn Benton Community College, and I am the chair of the Oregon Presidents Council, the Council for Community College Presidents.
And thank you both for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And as Ben Cannon indicated, the issues are complex, and we'll jump through some commitments that relate to the shared principles that we have as the four-year institutions and the community colleges. So if we can go to slide three. The first is a commitment to action related to the idea that students are going to transfer from community college to the public university of their choice, and that the degree pathways are critical to having those credits count toward graduation. It was pointed out in the previous slide, one of the key measures is credits to degree, the number of credits students accumulate as they get the baccalaureate, the minimum being 180. That's an issue that is first and foremost in this commitment to action. The other is to have clearer pathways related to meta majors, to have areas of study that then will lead to Representative Wisnett's point about having the credits transfer. Next slide. So our goal is to develop pathways for the top 25 majors with a commitment to have the top five of those majors done in the next year and the 25 majors within the next 5 years to have basically pathways that allow students to navigate the community colleges and the university of their choice, knowing that the university's differences are actually an asset to the state of Oregon, and keeping in mind that those differences help students graduate with fields that allow them to be productive citizens in the state of Oregon.
I appreciate your recognition that we've been working on this for a while, and I would like to note perhaps a cause for encouragement is you have a university president and a community college president here together speaking about something that we need to work on together, so I find hope there. We have certainly recognized and need state support for a seamless, transparent transfer system for our students that will avoid the credit loss that you've mentioned. We need financial aid policies, and individuals as well as federal and state should recognize and support the transition of our students from the two-year and four-year institution. And I think as Ben Canada, we have examples of doing that well. We don't do it in a comprehensive way. I think need state-level incentives for both the universities and the community colleges to transfer students who graduate in time and within the credit parameters, and we should be looking at specific ways in which we can encourage that. This really is an affordability issue. I would also add it is a student success issue. The better that we do transfer, the more of our students will succeed, and we'll move ourselves exponentially forward in terms of having, I think, the educated and trained workforce that we need for our future.
It was pointed out by Ben Cannon's presentation, there are a number of different modules or ways in which students transfer credits from the community colleges to the four-year institutions, and these are described on this slide. One of the points that may not be familiar to all committee members is the notion of reverse transfer. And what that means is in some cases students should actually transfer before the end of 2 years of time at a community college, attend the four-year institution of their choice, complete the remaining credits, and then in reverse apply the associate degree to that student's record, and then continue on for the baccalaureate degree. There's some evidence that students attaining a degree is a positive incentive to attaining ultimately the four-year degree. And so that's a new area that with exploration that I think promises to hold added incentives for us to see more and more of these credits count toward the ultimate degree that the student wishes to acquire. So that's one of the changes that perhaps is unique and unusual in this slide that you may not have seen before. But beyond that, again, it gets to the point of each four-year institution working with community colleges to identify a pathway, a roadmap of sorts, that indicates the way in which they would pursue a degree from one institution to the other.
Okay. Yeah. This is just a couple slides that show the trend in enrollment at our community colleges in Oregon.
Could I interrupt just for a second before we go too many slides ahead? Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Fuller, you mentioned things that are, you know, working on different pathways and so forth, or majors, and can you talk a little bit more about the work and what those pathways will look like? You know, are you talking about common course numbering between institutions, or how do we define this work?
Thank you for the question. The work really is varied by institution to some degree, but it's about aligning the coursework at each community college with the requirements at the partner institution, so the target school, if you will. And so it's a matter of having those courses be aligned so that some states call them 2+2 agreements, mm-hmm. Where you do the first 90 credits at a community college and then second 90 at the four-year institution. I said earlier, in some majors, actually transferring before the completion of 90 at the community college may be advantageous because of the way courses are stacked at the four-year institution that ultimately is going to grant the four-year degree. That's the kind of detail that needs to be worked out between institutions and by the faculty. And so those articulation pathways would be the roadmap that students would follow. So key to this is advising, which means you have to have a partnership relationship with community colleges, have advisors from the four-year institution spend time with community college advisors and students so that they have that pathway clearly identified and can reduce the loss that was referred to in this presentation by Ben Cannon.
Chair Reardon, it would be appropriate for me to add something to that.
Please.
So I appreciate certainly advising, and we talk about course numbering and identification in that regard are critical issues in making this work. I think the really interesting work is happening where we start thinking about what are the learning outcomes in each one of our courses and working not to align at some sort of numbering sequencing system, but to ensure that our students are learning what they need to learn in order to be prepared for the next institution, the next step in their program, and try to do that in a way that is coherent to the students. So it is advising, but it's also some structural changes in our curriculum as well.
I agree. Okay. Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg, could you go back one slide, please?
Sure. Let's see if I know how to
pushing
do that.
The buttons. Maybe it'll spin.
I think I have technical assistance here. Thank you.
The other one that had the graph with the number. Oh, okay. No, it's there. Pardon me. The bottom bullet there, accelerated learning. That different question than what we're talking about here, but I think that's another issue that the state needs to focus some attention on, because as we try to push more accelerated learning and CTE and those sort of you know, value-added measures to high school students, again, there needs to be an alignment factor with what they're coming out of in addition to their diploma. You know, if they have credits, that's great, but they need to be able to be, you know, worth something when they enter your system. This isn't so much the universities, but you know, as we talk about Measure 98, which obviously, again, as if it's fully funded, is going to be a huge investment in trying to, again, provide that value-added high school experience and so forth. So it's just another thing out there that we need to keep in mind and see what we can do to make sure we're doing good work on the part of students.
Absolutely, Representative Johnson and Chair Reardon and the committee. For the ideal of a program pathway to work for our state and for our students, it's got to start at the K-12 level and work all the way through the completion of a baccalaureate. And so while we're focusing on one specific transfer component, you know, in the big picture, as Ben Cannon has already mentioned, we've got to look at the whole trajectory, because that's how we're going to create an effective model for our student that it's also efficient with the resources that we have. So thank you. So this is, again, simply a graphic that shows.
Sorry, Greg.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you go back to the reverse transfer, I think it was several sessions ago we talked about that, and a lot of schools were doing it in other states. You know, if you're going to do your 40-40-20, then you get a degree out of that. At that time, if you explained it, you'd go back to the community college. I think we discussed whether four-year school could issue an AA degree. Is that still being considered? And you know, it's not transfer, but it's helping the 40-40-20.
I think some four-year schools do have the authority to issue associate degrees, but this is really important.
In Oregon?
Yes. This aspect is really partnering with one of the feeder institutions for my institution, Western, is not only Lynn Benton, but Chemeketa. And in that case, it would be a matter of a student coming from either of those institutions, Western, shy of the number of credits it takes to have earned the associate degree, and then taking the equivalent courses. To Greg's point, the content that would be equivalent. And at that point, that transcript gets shared with the community college, and the degree can be posted in reverse. That's what that means. It allows a student to basically earn a two-year degree on the path to the four-year degree.
Okay, Paul, I'm still not – I'm sorry, afternoon. Or can the students who do the reverse transfer, do they get a degree from the community college or an associate degree from the community college, or is it from Western?
In other states I've been in, it's from the community college itself. I don't believe that's true here.
But
at
had
all.
They, what if they, Mr. Chair?
Please.
If, what if they had not been in? They went to a four-year school, dropped out, but they had more than 2 years or enough. Is that being looked at?
I'm not sure I follow.
So, Representative Wisnett, Chairman, I can speak to this. There was a bill actually last session that I believe this committee heard and became law that Representative Greenlick introduced that had our commission look at this very issue, which is the student who has completed at the public university the equivalent of an associate's degree but not completed a bachelor's degree. We do have a report on the findings. Actually, Sean from our team worked with staff and faculty and others from colleges and universities on that. It is not the case today that a university could typically or would typically award an associate's degree to that student. And I think there is a sort of outstanding question about how that student could be provided with some sort of certificate of recognition or of the equivalent work that they did at a public university.
Thank you.
Separate, but it is distinct and separate from reverse transfer.
Thank you.
Any others? Okay. Got one. Rep. Reskin.
You asked, so I'll jump in.
All right.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all. It's a question for all three of you. So I'm kind of new to this and trying to figure out why somebody want to do a reverse transfer. And aligning the credits, I understand, is there's a requirements that you're trying to line up. But also there's a timing factor here. So if writing 122 is full in the winter at my community college, but it's open at the nearby university, I would reverse transfer in a sense to take it so that I don't have to wait yet another year for it to be offered in the winter term. Is that what I'm hearing from the reverse transfer?
Representative and the committee, no, I don't think that fits into the reverse transfer concept. But we do have partnership agreements with the universities that allow students to go back and forth between those institutions. And
quick follow-up.
Please.
Are all the universities and community colleges on quarters, or is there some on semesters, or are they all aligned that way?
We're all on the same quarters.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. So this is supposed to illustrate two things. One, that our enrollment trends with the economy, or actually inversely with the economy, and that a significant number of our students, in fact, will show that the majority of our students are part-time, which has specific impacts on this work. This is an interesting – this shows community college students by age, and you'll note that that the largest portion of them are older than what we would consider to be traditional age, 18 to 20, 21, that they come to us later and they continue in their education all the way up into their my age. So, something to think in terms of the type of students that we serve. Another indicator here is this is each of our 17 community colleges and a show of the ratio of full-time and part-time students, and you can see that in every case, more than half of our students are part-time. It varies from institution to institution a bit, but it's important to recognize that their educational trajectory is not perhaps what we had thought it might be, and it's important to take that into consideration as we think about how we do transfer. So,
I'm sorry, slow this afternoon. What are you really trying to say on the education trajectory is not?
Well, I think, Chair Reardon and the committee, I think for the community colleges, I think one of the things it means for us is that we may want to think about metrics that look more seriously as credit to completion than time to completion, because our community colleges are moving to a national metric model called the Volunteer Framework for Accountability, which looks further out at student completion for the community colleges, because the majority of our students are part-time. And so we think that as we look at how we establish metrics for transfer, we need to look not just at how quickly they do it, but perhaps more importantly, how many credits it takes for them to do it.
All right. Thank you.
That makes sense?
Yep.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for the question. This is an indication of the distribution of instructional programs at our community colleges, and certainly important to recognize that we have important programs in a variety of areas, but for the purpose of this discussion about transfer, it's important to note that over half of our programs, instructional programs, are of a variety that we call transfer, and lower division collegiate, and so it plays a very significant role in a majority of our students in terms of what their educational opportunities and trajectory might be. So, talk a little bit about the challenges to timely completion and completion with a certain credit limit. Certainly aligning, you had already mentioned aligning course selection with degree requirements. That happens in two ways. One has to do specifically with transfer, moving from one institution to another, but also the issue of making sure that that courses are scheduled in such a way that they support students' need for courses in specific programmatic areas in the term that they need them.
Right.
An important point. Students have a tendency to declare a major sometimes relatively late in their educational experience, and one of the things that we're working on specifically at my institution, but I think statewide, is to help a student through counseling and advising and a variety of exploration experiences to determine a major within their first term, so that that pathway for them can be more clearly established, and that will play a critical role in helping them to be, one, reduce the number of credits completion, but also significantly increases the probability that they will complete. Certainly, we need, as we've already mentioned, advising resources that help students navigate. So, addressing the transfer issue is a combination of making the system simpler, less of a maze and more of a path, and also providing good guidance for our students, both at the university and community college level. Again, that recognition that many of our students attend part-time, and there are limits on financial aid in terms of time to completion and terms to completion, and those are all things that we need to be taking into account as we design a good transfer policy for this state.
Chair?
Excuse me, Greg.
Yeah.
Rick Bonner.
Yeah.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about whether students are clear about their percentage completion as they move along in a path. So I'm thinking when I was going to school, the requirements sometimes would change, so that was a disincentive to dropping a major and changing a major. But in my mind, like when I'm taking a survey, if they tell me I'm 57% complete, I'm 66% complete, I'm much more likely to complete it if I know how far along I've gotten. Can you comment on?
Yes, Representative Bynum and Chair Reardon and the committee. That is a really important point, and I wish I could say that we have all that in place. We're able to, I think, communicate that on an individual basis using counselors and advisors, but our goal is to create the capacity for every student to know on any given day where they are on their pathway and what they have to do next and how far they have come along and how far they are to completing that path for themselves. And that is a critical component to this pathways work that we are doing here in the state, but also as at the national level to create that. Because you're right, it's motivating for the students, but it also gives them greater control over their educational experience. And we think that one of the goals of this work, in the big sense, is to equip students to make more informed educational decisions. So thank you. This is sort of an interesting graphic. It isn't specific to, this is not specific to our state, but it's national, and indicates the educational patterns that students take in terms, transfer students take. And we might assume that that everybody does a 2.2, and the data would indicate that only little over 8% of the students actually do a 2.2. The vast majority are in two big categories. One, they do 2 and then 3 years at a university for a variety of reasons. One of them is challenges with transfer. And the other biggest group is people who don't have a contiguous educational experience. They drop out and they come back. And that's a very significant a part of the student population that we serve here in Oregon and nationwide. This is, I think, an interesting data point. And again, this relates to national data. Just 58% of students successfully transferred 90% of their credits. So we're not even talking about 100%. We're talking about a 10% loss, and we're still dealing with less than half of the students. Interesting that you can read this, but 15% of the students aren't able to transfer any credits. But this is the one that I'm most interested in. Students who can transfer 90% or more credits are 2.5 times more likely to complete. And so that's where I want to emphasize that while this is a very significant affordability issue, this is also a very significant student success issue. Effective transfer policies mean more of our students will be successful.
And we'd like to do the one on the right.
Yeah.
Just
good.
Rep. Sorman.
Thanks, Chair. And I just wanted to make the comment that I think also that this reflects like what Representative Johnson was saying, talking about CTE and our so the steps of engaging our students while they're in high school, providing that foundation, giving them ideas for where their trajectory will take them, giving them that opportunity to, go through community college and then on to the next level. And so, I think that was an amazing slide to say right in there is, but I think that's a key component to it, is making sure that we're helping our students while they're in high school to understand there's multiple pathways.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah.
Representative Solomon and Chair Reardon and the committee, I think that's a really insightful observation. And again, I would note that there are places in which I think we're doing some really good work in that way. Again, I don't think we've scaled it up to a state-level strategy. But I think we're eager to do things like that.
Yeah.
So thank you. This is just...
Excuse me, Greg, while you're...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick comment. I mean, we're trying to figure out how to make higher education more affordable, and one of the ways is community college. So that's why students choose that, and yet only 58% of students can transfer 90%. So they're throwing away time and money in this less expensive option. Maybe it would have been better to go to the more expensive four-year school to begin with, and now we're back at the same place. So I see that was the slide before. I just see that as just the nugget of this presentation and where the problem is. I mean, you got to solve that. You can't be throwing away credits. Can't be throwing away money. Can't be throwing away time. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Amen. So this is just, I think, a re-representation of a piece of data that we saw before, which just indicates that students that start at a two-year institution end up with more credits than students who start at a four-year institution. The principal issue there is alignment and transfer issues between the two-year and a four-year institution, which is what we are looking forward to solving. So this is where we get to work together on the same slide, and what can help? Do you want to?
Well, many of the past few questions have brought us, you know, in some ways back to the commitment and call to action that we started the presentation with, which is that we're committed to identifying the top 25 pathways and do the first five immediately, things like business and biology, teacher education. Those are some examples where those meta majors will get to the point where the slides, when we study this a couple of years now, will show that there isn't loss of credits, that those credits do transfer and apply toward the bachelor's degree. That's why you see both of us here saying that both of our representative groups are committed to working on those barriers in ways that are challenging but yet solvable going forward. If we put the student at the center of the discussion and the equation that we're trying to solve, and I think both of us being here is a commitment to all of you that we are going to work in a very proactive way. Things like dual admission programs where students will have clear pathways, things like the accelerated learning, counting from high school to community college on to the four-year institution. Those are all things that are in place. They just need to be synchronized in some sense. And in many ways, this slide takes us full circle with the discussion we've had with Ben Cannon's laying out of national trends as well as our challenges here in Oregon.
I'd like to add, since Rex Fuller mentioned this, the issue of meta majors, which is a critical part of our redesign efforts at the community college level. We certainly have many, many students who come to us without a clear sense of what they want to major in, and we welcome those students. That's part of our mission. What we need to do is find effective ways of helping them to find a path as quickly as possible, and one of the strategies that we have developed is the concept of meta majors, which is essentially nests or sequences a series of major selecting decisions so that, for instance, at my institution, we have 86 majors. We know from good research that people don't make good choices when they have 86 options. And so what we're doing is creating a logical groups of majors, which we call meta majors, and we help students pick initially a meta major, so they don't have to pick a major, but they pick an area. And so we move students away from being uncommitted or undecided into a meta major, and then within that first term, ideally, they find the major and then are committed to that pathway for them. So That's really important work and something that we know that we can work on together. So,
question.
Okay.
Yeah. Rep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Fuller, on these pathways, again, I bring up the point, and I've been to conferences. We talk that you're talking about this to make affordable. Are you looking at reducing the number of required courses for specific degrees to reduce that number and add more electives so we don't have to miss that course? I think that's, my example is I was a journalism major. Well, there was very few required courses, but they wanted you to history and political science and everything else so you'd have all knowledge of all these different areas. Can't we do that with some of these general degrees, general business or something like that? Again, I think if you miss a required course one year and you pick it up another one, that's going to cost you more money. So reducing the required without degrading the degree, can we reduce? Are you looking at reducing the required courses by your deans?
Representative Wisnett, that's a great question. In fact, I so appreciate it because it's as if you have been inside the committee meetings I've had with my planning committee since last April that just led to a new strategic plan that was approved last month by our Board of Trustees. And one of the pillars of that plan is to re-engineer, re-evaluate all of our degree pathways so that 180 is really 180. And so the way we do that is we look not at the catalog requirements, but what's the actual path that students follow to graduate in an area. And one of the key barriers is, are there any flexible free electives, I call them?
Yeah.
And so those are all principles that are now being charged implementation as we go from the strategy of degree completion. Our first pillar is student success. We want students to graduate. When we admit them, we celebrate their admission. Many of them are the first in their families to graduate high school and go to college. We celebrate that moment with them, but we say the next challenge is to cross the next finish line, and that means the four-year degree in our case. So those are exactly some pillars of our implementation of our new strategic plan, and so I think you're exactly right.
Bless you. Much success.
Thank you. As a personal note, I might say that I transferred from community college in my first step into the higher education, and it was for lots of reasons that don't really matter. And I was one of those students that didn't leave with a two-year degree, but navigated the catalog to the point where I knew what I needed to take to move to the four-year institution that I had identified. So in that sense, it's personal to me that we have pathways that work. And while students can navigate, we want to make it easier so that all of our students can navigate that system.
Thank you.
Representative Wiesen and committee, again, I want to mention the work around a project called Guided Pathways, which is a national effort that Lynn Bend is a part, and I think we as a state are moving toward. It's a really relevant question, and our institution a few years ago went through that same effort of trying to get a two-year degree within 2 years, and because it's really easy to add things to it and really go back and say, what do you really need in order to complete that two-year degree and have made progress there, and I think we continue to do that. I think the issue of creating a system that is in intuitive to all people is a critical challenge for all of us. I know this adds a dimension to this, but it's an important one, I think, to all of us. If you come from a family that is educated and predominantly middle class, there are a lot of pieces of our educational system that intuitively make sense. Because we come to that educational experience with something we call cultural currency. It feels like how I was raised. If I come from a background in which my parents are not educated or I'm economically disadvantaged, there are a lot of ways that are sort of just in the design of education that aren't readily understandable. And one of the things that we need to be doing in our transfer work and in our program design work is to sort of make cultural currency less determinative of a student's success. Our goal as a state, and certainly is that education would be that pathway for all people. And as Ben Cannon has mentioned, many of those students who start from in a variety of economically disadvantaged backgrounds start at a community college for good reason. We want to make sure that that doesn't disadvantage them because they started there. We want to make sure that they have just as much advantage, not just to attend a community college and a university, but to actually complete and be put in the same position of opportunity that someone who comes from a position of opportunity. And I think that this work around transfer is going to be critically important that we for us to do that. So,
I really appreciate those remarks. I can't help but remember those of you that remember Representative Gallego and his experience in the system, and he talked about it. I wish he was here to share that story, but Rep. Solman, did you still have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. And I think you know, to comment on some of the things that had been said. We talk about, like, making sure, like, folks say, what are the reasons, and if this isn't working, why not just do this and whatnot. But there, I think what you touched on is that there are multiple reasons why folks are in, you know, struggling with the timeliness, struggling with the how long it's taking them to get their degree and whatnot. One of them is that affordability piece. So some of them are working while they are going to college because of the cost factor. I have to just, I keep harping on this, but also understanding that some of them just aren't sure what they want to do. And so they enter into community college to try to help them figure out their, I was one of those students. I wasn't sure, and I enrolled in PCC because I was like, I don't know. And so really trying to help them find that direction so that before, you know, if that pathway was going to take me to something I needed a four-year degree for, then I could, you know, go on. So I think there's, I'm not thinking of the word, but there's just multiple things that we can look at, but ultimately I just appreciate this conversation because we want to make it more affordable. We want to engage our students in this process, and the earlier the better. And just on the side note, I just appreciate some of these school districts that are doing, like Hillsborough, with career and college pathways, and I know that Western's at the table and talking about, like, how are we aligning our courses to make sure that we're getting students, you know, that foundation before they enter college. So wanted to say that.
Thank you for that. The person leading that effort is Dave McDonald, who's actually here in the audience, his support for me. So
I sit at the table, and he's there, too.
Thank you.
And my son's
lots of great conversations. I think we've highlighted one of the things I've heard is the importance of counseling. We've talked about that in this committee. Rep. Solomon's on the K-12 Education Committee as well, working on counseling, how that important that is for kids to come into your programs prepared if they know what they want. That would be helpful. But I don't think it lets us off the hook in terms of making something that's simple enough to understand and it's transferable from one institution to the other. So I'm glad you're committed to working on that. And I want to be really clear, you did say five majors, and you're talking statewide, right? Not just from one institution to another, but statewide. Okay.
Each institution working with the community college partners that most likely feed their institutions.
I thought so. I just want to be abundantly clear on that.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time this afternoon. If you can spare time and stick around for the rest of the hearing, that would be helpful. If you have something else to do, it's totally understandable. We just anticipate the possibility of other questions for you, but anyway, we know where you live. So.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much for being here today. Okay, I'm closing the informational hearing, and I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2998. House Bill 2998, it's a long overdue bill that would align credits earned through the Oregon Transfer Module to be counted towards their degree, not just as an elective. And it's been a problem affecting students for the last, I had to edit my notes. I thought I had down 20 years problem, that's 30. And certainly well before I showed up here. So for the last, anyway, we've been talking about it a long time. I think we feel on this committee very committed to the idea of let's get something done this time and try to really do whatever we have to align that. So I'm really happy that we have that commitment from the schools themselves. So it is definitely an affordability issue, and we can't just keep, you know, raising tuition and then not making sure those credits have value. So anyway, let's where are we at here? Rep. Johnson, did you have any comments before we get started on this? You know, you've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it, committee members. This idea and this topic has been something that's that I've been focused on for quite a while. As I said, when we first started, I've been on this committee for it's my fourth term on the committee, and, you know, Rep. Wisnett mentioned we've talked about this issue a lot. I've served on task force. I remember there was one we had, 4 years ago where we identified big rocks. Anybody remember that? Elizabeth, are you on that one? Jock, I think, was here. He left. You know, what are the barriers out there? You know, we identified, you know, point A, point B, and so forth. And we identified them, but we didn't do a heck of a lot about them. They're still there, unfortunately, as we find. So I'm at the point, and I think there's others in the building are at the point, and it really is time for some action points. And that's the intent of the bill here. And just to, you know, further flesh it out a bit, it's really a starting place for the conversation. And I really would love to take the next 3 weeks or so to, or whatever it takes before we have to finish our work in this chamber, to work with stakeholders, to put together some metrics that have some outcomes attached to them so that we can provide some certainty to students. And I think it's just really interesting even to look at the HEX transfer policy vision statement. And here it says, top of the list, student transfer from community college to public university should be free from unnecessary obstacles, so the rock should be out of the way. Transfer policy should be coordinated statewide for the sake of students' efficient pathways to degree completion in Oregon, while institutionally developed specific articulation agreements are both valued and valuable, and we heard about some of those. The propensity of students to quote-unquote swirl amongst institutions prior to baccalaureate completion necessitates strong state-level policy that supports transfer student success. So even in the HEC, you know, vision statements, it's here. I would say it's also in the community college, what they're working on, too. They outline these same priorities. So we've heard some great ideas here on collaboration that's going on. But as I said, I think it is time for some real outcomes. And I guess one of the other points that I think, from my perspective, even underlines the need to do this in a timely fashion would be the success of the Oregon Promise. Because, again, the state is going out on a limb here to provide tuition support for these students so that they can get their degree completion without debt. And we need to make sure that if they do the right thing, you know, keep their nose clean, show up for work, get the credits, get the degree, that they now can need no more than another 90 to get out the door, because it only seems right if we as a state are going to step up and provide this offering. So I think it's an exciting opportunity. So I'm pledged, you know, and committed, Mr. Chair, to working with stakeholders throughout the building, colleges, universities, the HEC, to see what we can put together over the next few weeks and come back with a bill that really has some time-sensitive outcomes attached to it so that we can build on. And I will just say, you know, I pulled some little research on what some other states have done, and obviously other states have done some good work on this too. But for instance, the state of Iowa, it came out with a plan a few years back where they had specific time constraints in here. They say develop and implement by January 1st of 2012. You know, that was a part of their legislation. They had it here. Process, examine a minimum of 8 new community college pathways is what they said. And you're going to have this work done by a specific time. Boom. So, I mean, we can get to a certain point in this building and in this area of public education, I think, having work groups and suggesting we like to see certain outcomes, but occasionally I think there's a need for a legislative prod in the process. I won't say a kick in the pants, but I could. But I think we're at that point. I just think we're at that point, and for the sake of our students and, frankly, for the sake of our state's economy, I think that's really what it's about and where we're at. So with that, Mr. Chair,
Well, I appreciate your persistence and your willingness to continue working on this. So unless we solve things by the end of this 40 minutes, half hour actually, probably take you up on your offer to convene a few folks and let's iron out the remaining issues, because we can do this. I heard an understanding of the problem and a commitment to solve it, so exactly. Practically done. Laura, would you please provide the committee with a brief summary of the bill?
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2998 would direct the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to study and develop recommendations on best methods for creating common course numbers and ensuring courses are commonly accepted at public post-secondary institutions.
Okay, great. Thank you. We're fortunate to have testimony today, Gus Smith, and a student from Lane Community College. And Lamar, did I see you out there? I did. Lamar Wise, Legislative Director, Oregon Student Association. Welcome.
Thank you.
And whichever of you would like to go first, it's fine.
Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnan, and members of the committee. My name is Gus Smith. I attend Lane Community College, and I'm an intern for the Oregon Student Association. Thank you for the time to share my own experience and testimony on a subject that's been a central issue in my own life. I've attended Lane Community College in Eugene for the last year and a half, where I've accumulated around 100 credits. This is my second stint with community college, and I'm eager to transfer to the University of Oregon in the fall. A critical issue facing students, and community college students in particular, is the aspect of time. I'm 24 years old, which by the standards of an ever-increasing and competitive job market, has new responsibilities and expectations that did not exist a generation before. I fear for my own clock, for the closing window into a viable job market, and for the eclipse of a chance to build a profession of my vision, independent from the dictation of a will other than my own. I found academic and professional purpose in the law, and a direction that will lead me from Lane Community College to the University of Oregon to pursue a degree in political science. I've been a devoted student and will maintain the whole of my credits upon my transfer. However, my credits aren't considered upper division, meaning that courses taken at Lane in terms of their value are worth less compared to some identical courses offered at a four-year university, which means I will inevitably have to take those same courses after my transfer. For instance, my internship at OSA, will have to be repeated at the University of Oregon as an upper-level course. This is unsettling as a student and as someone who would sooner start a career rather than stay in school. I attended community college in order to save money, to take courses I knew would be both useful and economical to my personal goals. Yet if I knew to the extent or the extent to which I would be taking identical courses adjusted only to the increased cost of a four-year university, I would have been less inclined to meddle away at junior level and would have welcomed taking on increased debt for the sake of my own time. This issue comes down to the intent of the university. Lane and the U of O are compatible and share a variety of direct programs and transfers, but to require students to retake essentially the same class is entrepreneurial, corporate, and against the spirit of education. An initiative to remedy the current attitude towards transferable credits in public colleges and universities would encourage students to engage in academia at all levels of higher education. Sponsoring universal credit transfer in order to create an effective and accessible program for students of all educational levels allows them to pursue their own avenue of education without fear of wasted time and money. The idea of spending my own limited resources is frightening, but an inevitable cost in a path to a degree. Yet for those at community colleges, for those who now come to the table with a greater notion of themselves and what they would do with their lives, education needs to be easier. School should be hard. It should be an endurance. And the challenges of education are a lesson in the merits of perseverance. However, in the face of increased tuition rates across the public college and university system, for the sake of college students across the state, some small aspect of education needs to change in order to continue to grow Oregon's educated public. House Bill 2998 is a small recognition that the struggles of student debt and a narrowing workforce are debilitating issues for those pursuing higher education. And universal credit transfers is a small step in conserving both money and time for students. We need our general credits to be universally transferable to all public colleges and universities in Oregon. Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnan, members of the committee, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Gosh, any questions?
Is it appropriate to clap?
Yeah. We could do this.
Thank you very much.
We have a question.
Thank you for your testimony, and good luck in your education future. The courses that are not being accepted, are they 200 level? And does any of the universities, University of Oregon, have a method to challenge your ability to get credit for that course?
Thank you, Vice Chair Wisnan, for the question. Most of my credits are being transferred. It's to the extent, and they're being accepted as general credits, but they're actually not being accepted for the class themselves. So, for instance, my internship at Lane is a level 200, and for political science requirement, and my internship at Lane is a political science internship. A similar internship at the University of Oregon is level 400, which just seems a little bit off for me. I mean, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Great response.
Thank you. Lamar, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for asking, Chair Rudin. For the record, my name is Lamar Wise. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. I don't have much else to add. As you can see, our students are very passionate about this. We recently had a student conference this past weekend where we actually were able to talk about this in depth. It was very timely, so we were able to put this on the agenda, and students talked about this. And what was very, very clear from the discussion is that students are ready for immediate action on this issue. We have seen the studies. We have also seen what the effects could be of the ability for students to be able to transfer their credits, save dollars, and get through their higher education career at a quick enough pace where they can get back to be given back to society and back to the workforce. I do want to emphasize that we are also very thankful that this conversation is happening. And also very thankful that folks are coming to the table and working together. We recognize that this is this can be a very lengthy process, and a process that will take time and effort from multiple stakeholders. In terms of student outcomes, we feel that this is best for us in terms of affordability and aiding the student experience going through higher education. So just wanted to say thank you, and also say that the Oregon Student Association is supportive of this and the efforts to strengthen universal credit transfer from all public institutions at Oregon. I'm also happy to take questions, but I think a lot was said already in support of this, so thank you.
Question? All right, great. Thank you both for being here today. Appreciate your advocacy. And we have two additional people, so Lita Culligan, OIT, and Robert Kier, or Kerr, I'm not sure.
Kier.
Here. If you would join us, please, or no? Please. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnet, and I'm missing Vice Chair Alonzo Leon, but and members of the committee. I'm Lita Culligan. I'm Associate Vice President at Oregon Tech, but I'm here to speak on behalf of all seven public universities. I have a very simple message. First, we too applaud you for taking on this issue. As you can see, and you heard from President Fuller and President Hammond this morning, or earlier in the presentation, we are working really hard on this issue now, and we want to continue that work with your assistance and guidance. We feel like this is really an important affordability issue, as you've raised many times. We also want to see students succeed. We want to see them get to their path in the most efficient way possible. So we all share that common goal. Thank you. Second, I'm really here to just offer our help. We want to work with you. I know that Representative Johnson mentioned earlier that he's not wedded, if you will, to the solution that's in the proposed bill. We'd like to work with you to bring our experts to the table, the people that have to deal with our accreditation standards, as well as all the transfer work that we're already doing, and try to find the right solution for Oregon students. So please engage us as much as you can, and we want to work with you.
Great.
Sooner is good. You also heard, I think, that from the presidents when they presented that we have some shared principles together, the universities and the community colleges. We are working on that meta pathway development, and we are putting timelines on this. So I think those are some really good starting places for our discussion. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Robert Keir, and I'm the president of the Interinstitutional Faculty Senate of Oregon, and I'm also Philip H. Knight Professor of Music at the University of Oregon and chair of the Music Composition Department.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to give this testimony, and again, I'd like to applaud all of you for taking on this issue, which is really crucial to us as faculty members. Interinstitutional Faculty Senate represents all of the 8 university campuses through the faculty and also students. We are very, very focused on the needs of students and feel that it's so important going forward to improve the connections in a curricular manner and in all of the ways that we've been discussing today between the community colleges and the universities. And to let you know that many of us have already been doing this work for many, many years. I've been at the University of Oregon since 1990, and some of my very best students have been from community colleges and now have major positions throughout the country. So it's important for us to recognize that most of what we're doing is working quite well, but fine-tuning that and connecting it to affordability and accessibility will make all the difference in the world. This is what we need to do now, as we've heard today from numerous individuals. So I'd just like to talk about 8 principles very quickly and to say that the university faculty support this effort and especially to improve the communication between community colleges and their needs and universities as related to curriculum and content, which we haven't talked about, how content relates to course numbering, for example. A number alone won't fix the problem. We have to look at the content and how that works across the systems and make sure that our students who we're focused on are getting what they need for their education so they can get the jobs that they desire that are truly for their highest good. Second, we have to realize that one size does not fit all. This is what got us into trouble before in Oregon when we tried to make all 8 universities more or less into the same university. It's what's destroying the California system. I taught at UCLA at one point, and there was this sense of trying to make all the universities somehow fit into one series of boxes that were equivalent one to the other, and they're just simply not. Each university has its own mission and goals, and now that we're in a new system, no longer with the state board and the chancellor, we're now with the HEC. We find that it's working so much better that each university can achieve the most that it can for each of its students given this new organization. And that's important to realize, that we don't want to create something that will try to put everybody into the same box that won't ultimately work. We'll actually end up spending more money in the end and not serving the highest needs of our students. Next, the idea of lower division general education. It's crucial to focus on this, but we need to think also about the alignment with majors, because just if we do solve the issues related to the lower division general education, it won't necessarily work for all of the majors. We need to make sure that the general education is aligned with the majors. But the fourth point is that we can't decide the curriculum of the majors. That has to be left to the units and the professors who are responsible for doing that work. So that's very important, especially with the majors. That's where we'll run into some issues, because they're very specific to each university and to each unit within each university. And then the connectivity and coordination between university faculties within the 8 campuses is very important. How to achieve that, because we haven't really had, for example, the convening of those faculties to discuss some of these issues that we've been talking about today, and finding a way to bring faculty together to discuss those issues to help you do the work that you need to do. We're very committed to working with the HEC and with Executive Director Ben Cannon and Veronica Dujon, the Director of Academic Planning and Public Policy. And in fact, in the next 2 days, we'll be giving a report to the HEC on their vision statement related to the transfer policy. We've been working very hard on this, have gotten a lot of input, and we'll be submitting that in the next, actually on March 2nd. So some of this thinking comes out of that. and as related to the connectivity and coordination between the university faculty members in particular, because they don't necessarily have much connection about some of these matters at the moment. And then advising at the community college level is very important, and the idea that has come forth is that perhaps it would be helpful to have university advisors go to community colleges and help with particular advising related to those universities, mm-hmm. that could improve the situation without being much additional expense at all. And or it could also be that community college students could have more access to advising within specific universities, again, without much additional cost. And then finally, a focus on the online resources. I thought that this point was excellent that was brought up earlier. And our thought is that there needs to be a focus on accessibility so that these online resources are easily accessible to any student. A clarity of what's being presented so that students don't get caught in some kind of maze, online digital maze. And then finally, flexibility within the pathways so that each student can actually achieve what he or she is truly wanting to achieve, the true goals, and not getting in a situation where they're taking courses that don't necessarily ultimately connect to the goals that are their particular goals for the career that they're hoping to enter. And I was particularly heartened to hear the testimony of the gentleman who is now at Lane Community College and hoping to enter the University of Oregon. And I think his thinking is right about this. I empathize and am concerned for students such as this young man who is at a point of having to make important mm-hmm. decisions about his life and needs the resources that only we can provide. So I want each and every one of you to know that we're here to work with you as Interinstitutional Faculty Senate, representing all of the faculty members of the Universities of Oregon. And please call on us at any point that we can be helpful, providing information, connecting you to experts in various departments and in various areas that could be helpful in shaping this bill and going forward.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions of this panel? Rep. Johnson.
Wow, thank you. Well, that was awesome. Was it Professor Keir? Is that correct?
Yes, Professor Keir.
Thank you. Wow, I appreciate the detail you laid out there. So just to help us understand the task in front of us, put us in the room with you and your colleagues, let's say from the universities and the colleges, and as we look at trying to examine course equivalencies and take on that, how does that interaction happen? You've been, obviously, your faculty senate has done some work like this, but what are the major challenges that need to be overcome in that conversation?
I think first we need to get people together in the same room as we both
convening
said.
Convening number one.
Convening is number one.
Okay, we'll start
and,
there.
And focusing on that convening in collaboration with the HEC, I think that's crucial, because part of, as I understand it, part of the mission of the HEC is convening of various sorts, and this would be a perfect opportunity for that. First, I think the university faculties need to communicate with each other, community colleges, their faculties with each other, to try to each bring them to the table together what is needed to improve the connectivity between those levels. How could it happen? I think it could happen quickly if we mobilize our forces, because everybody cares about this so deeply. I think they would make the time, and certainly they would be willing to put forth the energy. It could happen as early as I don't think by the end of March, because we have the break coming up and we have final exams, but certainly in April we could do something. Would that kind of timeline be helpful?
It would be helpful, yes. And if we can rely upon you, perhaps, to speak for your colleagues and at least allow you to be in the process as we go forward. I think for the purposes of putting this bill together, I think perhaps your input and whoever else you might suggest would be.
Because we're a conduit, so we could provide that.
Exactly.
And we could work.
We're not going to fix the problem in 3 weeks, but no. I think we could at least put together a framework that could get us to where we want to be in a few years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Chair Reardon, Representative Johnson, I would say most of the, actually all of the universities and community colleges have been doing this pathing work with articulation agreements for many, many years. Like, we have over 100 at Oregon Tech. But those have been institution to institution. And what you are hearing us propose today is much more comprehensive. So we would take a major and then look at how 17 institutions, or those that would be potential feeders, would fit into it. So I think we know how to do it. It is a matter of taking the time to sit down and do it. And so I think you're right. It is an important function. The universities and colleges have appointed transfer work groups that put the right people in the room who are, and I'm not suggesting you're not the right person, I'm just saying we all have academic agreement type folks who do this work with the faculty. And so that's the work that really has to be done, and setting a timeline I think is important to getting to the end result more quickly. But I think we do know how to do it, and it is about the content alignment of the content of the courses. We just need to actually do it more comprehensively than we've been doing it in the past.
I think one of the really important points is to make a distinction between general education requirements and the majors. So what I've heard you just say is the majors, where I'm wondering whether what you meant is the general education requirements, because they're very different in the minds of faculty. And I mean all faculty, from faculty at the lowest ranks to the highest ranks, if you want to look at the structure in that way. No matter what rank we're talking about, whether they be career non-tenure track, or whether they be adjuncts, or mm-hmm. whether they be in the tenure track side of things, all the way up to the professorial rank. But I think we need communication between faculty at all of these levels, because ultimately they'll be responsible for shaping the curriculums that are going to make this successful, exactly what we're doing, the transfer policy and the other policies we've been discussing.
Okay, thank you. I want to thank the university presidents for sticking around. At least appreciate that. You dodged a bullet. I don't want to ask any other questions of you, but I do appreciate your staying here for the conversation. I may have misspoken a little bit earlier when I said, you can sit down if you wish. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
When I said that we understood the problem, I suspect that we have some additional problem definition. I still think there's a commitment to let's get that problem identified, bring people together, and not take another 30 years working on it. The phrase working on it really worries me. I want to focus on what are the outcomes we need, and let's get it done. I really appreciate your commitment and everybody being here. Closing remarks? All right.
Thank you. We're doing
well. 10 minutes early. Thank you very much. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2998.